Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Botched Butterscotch by Amanda Flower, narrated by Rebecca Mitchell. Chapter 1. I buzzed about the front room of Swissman Sweets, the candy shop in Harvest, Ohio, that I ran with my Amish grandmother, Clara King. As I scurried about, I hit every flat surface that I could reach with a feather duster. I dusted the maple shelves that held the glass jars of jelly beans, lemon drops, licorice, and hard candy, all of which were made in this very shop. I stopped just short of dusting the shop cat, Nutmeg, a little orange-striped feline who watched my feather duster with studied interest. "Bailey," my grandmother said from behind the half-domed glass counter where we displayed our most enticing treats. Molded chocolate creations, truffles, and fudge all had a place of honor behind the glass. At the moment, my grandmother was sliding a tray of butterscotch peanut bars into the case. "You must calm down, Kint. You are making us all dizzy." After the tray was in place, she patted the prayer cap on the back of her head. "Your parents will be here any moment. The shop is as clean as it's ever been. There is nothing more you can do." "Cousin Clara is right," said Charlotte Weaver, our young Amish shop assistant and my cousin. She put away the bottle of vinegar water she'd been using to clean the counter. "You are making me nervous." "I know I'm wound a little tight. I just can't believe that Mom and Dad are actually coming to Harvest today. I thought they never would again." I stepped behind the counter and stowed the feather duster in the cabinet below the cash register with the other cleaning supplies. As I moved, my dangly silver earrings knocked against my cheeks. Being the only non-Amish person in Swissman Sweets, I was also the only one wearing any type of jewelry. I have always been partial to dangly earrings. I never thought my parents would return to Swissman Sweets because my father ran away from Harvest when he was a young man. He left the Amish community and Ohio so that he could marry my mother. When I was a child, they came back once a year so my grandparents could see me. But once I was an adult, my parents stopped those visits. I didn't think they had been in Ohio in over 10 years, except for a very brief trip to attend my grandfather's funeral. My nerves were heightened by the fact that my parents did not approve of my decision to leave my job as a prestigious New York City chocolatier to move to Amish country. I suspected in their eyes I'd gone backward, since I'd settled in the place they'd fled when they were young. I straightened up and ran my damp palms over my jeans. Mommy was right. I needed to get a grip. I calmed down just as the front door opened and my mother and father walked in. Dad looked like any other suburban New England father. He wore chinos, loafers, and a light blue polo shirt, polo with a big P, and his gray hair was combed back from his face. A pair of sunglasses sat in the breast pocket of his shirt. He was clean-shaven. Looking at him, you would never know that he spent the first 20 years of his life in the plain community. My mother, on the other hand, had not grown up Amish. She was originally from Holmes County, too, but from an English family in the county seat of Millersburg. She wore a long flowered sundress and short-sleeved cardigan, and I thought the best evidence that she'd never been Amish was the flower tattoo on the inside of her right arm. It was something she got as a teenager when she wanted to assert herself, or so she'd told me when I wanted one as a child. Tattoos were forbidden in the Amish world, and I always suspected, having grown up in Holmes County, the tattoo was my mother's way of stating her Englishness. My mother's parents passed away before I was born. They were farmers, and she didn't want that for herself or her husband. When she and my father fell in love, he left his Amish district and they ran away to New England. He went to college on a scholarship and got a corporate job, and my mother delved into her first love, painting. She sold her New England landscapes in gift shops around the region. When I was old enough, my parents would leave me in Holmes County for the entire summer. This gave them time to travel and see the world without a child tagging along behind them. During those weeks and months when I was alone with my Amish grandparents, I fell in love with chocolate. I know people say all the time that they love chocolate, but I really did, and do to this day. At 5, I asked my grandfather to teach me the art of candy making, and I never looked back. However, I can't say my parents were pleased with my dream. I refused to go to college and instead enrolled in culinary school with an emphasis on chocolate and desserts. It was my goal to be a world-renowned New York chocolatier, and I almost made it. I was days away from being promoted to head chocolatier at J.P. Chocolates, where I had been the protege of owner Jean-Pierre Rouge for 6 years, until I walked away from it all to move to Harvest and help my grandmother at Swissman Sweets after my grandfather's death. I knew it was the very last place on earth my parents wanted me to land. Mom and Dad thought I had thrown away my career by leaving New York, but I felt differently. In New York, I was a workaholic. Everything about my life was related to my work. But in Harvest, I could be a new person. I could have a life outside of candy that included friends, a boyfriend, and a bit of sleuthing, too. However, I wondered if my parents' opinion would soon change. In 2 months, my cable television show, Bailey's Amish Sweets, would air on gourmet television. I had been going back and forth between Harvest and New York City for months to shoot the show and publicize its debut. Maybe when my parents saw that I could succeed in both worlds, Harvest and New York City, they would believe that I'd made the right choice. Then again, there were no guarantees when it came to television. "This place has not changed a bit," my mother, Susan King, said the moment she stepped into the shop. "I swear I just traveled back in time. Though I always feel like that when we come back." She shook her head. "I don't know why I expect Holmes County to change." My father, Silas, was far less vocal than my mother.
"It is nice to see the old shop."
Swissman Sweets was more than just a shop to my father. It was his childhood home. He and my grandparents had lived in the apartment above the shop when he was a child. Charlotte and my grandmother lived there now. I stepped out from behind the counter just in time for my mother to envelop me in a hug. "Bailey!" She smelled like roses and sunscreen, and it reminded me of childhood weekends along the shore. "I'm so glad we are finally here. I thought we would never make it. It's so easy to forget how out of the way Harvest is. It was cow after cow on the drive here. Isn't that true, Silas?" My father smiled at my mother.
"It's true. But we really haven't been away from Harvest long enough for you to forget about the cows, my dear. We were here last year."
There was a quiet moment when everyone realized this was when they'd come for Dottie's funeral. "I suppose not," she said, passing over the unsaid words. "It's so nice to see you too, Clara." My grandmother smiled and gave each of my parents a hug. "We are glad you came. It will be a very special weekend for us all." She turned to gesture to Charlotte. "And I don't think you have met our cousin, Charlotte." Dad shook his head.
"That's the thing about being Amish. There are cousins I never knew all over the county."
Charlotte blushed so red her face was almost the color of her hair. Mom smoothed her dark hair, the same color as mine, over her shoulder. "I'm just so happy to spend Mother's Day weekend with my girl." She turned to me. "What do you have planned, Bailey?" I frowned. I should have realized that my mother would want an agenda. Mom was what I would call a super planner. Grocery lists were organized by the layout of the supermarket, and family vacations were run like military ops. She wasn't the free spirit her tattoo would suggest. "Well," I began, "tomorrow there's a tea."
Before I could finish my thought, the door opened again, and this time, Juliet Brody and her polka-dotted, pot-bellied pig Jethro tootled into the candy shop. Once Jethro was inside, he made a beeline for Nutmeg, and the cat and pig bumped noses. Dad stared at the animals.
Do they know each other?
Oh, yes, Mommy said. They know each other quite well.
Jethro, Juliet said, don't be so rude. Come back here. We're here to meet Bailey's parents. You can visit with Nutmeg another time.
She pulled lightly on the pink polka-dotted nylon leash tethered to Jethro's collar. The leash matched her skirt, which was also pink polka-dot, and she'd paired it with a white sweater. To say that Juliet loved polka dots was a grave understatement. This was becoming more and more apparent to me as her wedding to Reverend Brooke drew near. I was to be her maid of honor, and every swatch of cloth and piece of stationery I saw had polka dots on it. The pig didn't budge at Juliet's tug. I wasn't the least bit surprised. Jethro was the most stubborn animal I had ever met, and I had a pet rabbit named Puff who ate my slippers. Jethro caused more trouble, and 60% of the time it was on purpose. My mother put a hand on her chest.
You brought a pig into Swissman Sweets?
Juliet bent over and scooped Jethro up off the ground.
Of course I did. This is my comfort animal, Jethro. He goes everywhere I go. I can't imagine life without him. I need him with me. He keeps me calm, especially now that I'm trying to plan my wedding.
Mom wrinkled her nose.
But you're inside a candy shop.
She paused.
With a pig. Is it sanitary to have a pig inside the candy shop? What if the health inspector decided to drop in?
Juliet frowned.
The health inspector would understand. I have to have Jethro with me at all times. I have a note from my therapist if you would like to see it.
That's not necessary, Mom said, and peered down at Jethro as if he were a bug under a microscope. The little pig looked up at her and cocked his head. Mom gasped.
It's almost like he understands we're talking about him.
He does, Juliet said. You know, pigs are very intelligent. On the same level as dolphins, some say.
I glanced down at Jethro. As much as I loved him, he was no dolphin. The door opened again. This was the third time in 10 minutes, and not a paying customer among them. Sheriff Deputy Aiden Brody stepped into Swissman Sweets and scanned the room with his chocolate-brown eyes like he always did when entering a building. Years of being a deputy had taught him to take everything in before letting his guard down even a little. My heart gave a flutter when he made eye contact with me and smiled.
Did someone call the police about the pig already? My mother asked.
I thought it was best to ignore her question.
Mom, Dad, this is Aiden.
I stopped short of saying my boyfriend, although Aiden and I had been dating for several months. Instead, I said, he's Juliet's son.
So this is Aiden. Can I give you a hug?
My mother wrapped her arms around him before he could answer.
Mom pulled back.
Bailey has told us a little bit about you, so we know that you're important to her. She's very closed-mouthed about her personal life. The last time she had a boyfriend, we didn't learn about him until we read it in the papers.
I felt my face redden. I didn't want to be reminded, or have Aiden be reminded, of my failed relationship with a celebrity pastry chef back in New York.
He seems so much more stable than your last boyfriend. Not that I met the last one, but based on the articles, my mother said in a stage whisper, and I wondered what it would take for the floor to open up and swallow me. I was open to the possibility. It seemed a whole lot better than standing there watching my mother assess Aiden's worth as my boyfriend.
Juliet clapped her hands.
Aiden, I just knew you would come over to meet Bailey's parents. Now that we are all together, we can start making plans. Juliet took my mother's hand. I am so excited to finally discuss the wedding.
Your wedding? My mother asked, looking down at Juliet's firm grasp on her fingers.
Oh, no. I do love talking about my wedding. I would talk to you about it all day and night if you let me.
She beamed. But in this case, I'm speaking of the union of our two families. What's that? My father asked. I shot Aiden a panicked look. Mother, Aiden interrupted. I think it would be much better for us to spend this weekend celebrating you mothers and all that you do for us. That's what Mother's Day is about.
Juliet patted his cheek. You are the finest and kindest son.
She dropped her hand and beamed at my parents.
He has always put my happiness first. That's why I need to think about his.
Dad folded his arms. What is going on? What is this about a wedding?
Juliet is getting married on the weekend of July 4th. It is going to be a great event. Aiden is best man, and I'm maid of honor.
Jethro will be the ring bearer, I said, hoping that if I overwhelmed them with information about Juliet's wedding, they would forget any mention of another wedding, namely a wedding involving Aiden and me as groom and bride. We weren't even engaged.
A pig as a ring bearer? My mother asked, in a tone that implied she had now heard everything. Yes, it will be such a special moment.
Juliet wrapped her hands around Jethro's leash.
Reverend Brooke was hesitant at first, but when I told him Bailey would walk Jethro down the aisle, he was on board.
My mother stared at Juliet as if she had a unicorn horn in the middle of her forehead.
Juliet laughed. But we should really stop talking about my wedding and speak about the wedding between.
The candy shop door opened for a fourth time, and I was never so happy to have a conversation interrupted. Over the next 3 days, I would have to do my very best to keep Juliet away from my mother so that she didn't plant the idea of my non-existent wedding in my parents' heads.
You should start selling tickets to get in here, Charlotte whispered.
No kidding, I muttered back. The next person to walk through the door to Swissman Suites was none other than community leader and super organizer Margot Rawlings. Margot was a woman in her late 60s, with short curls on the top of her head and a walk that would instill fear into anyone trying to run away from her. There was just something about the way Margot marched that told you there was no real escape. You might slip away from her once, maybe even twice, but if she had you in her sights, she would eventually track you down. I had never met anyone with more determination, and I lived most of my adult life in New York City.
Bailey, just the woman I wanted to talk to.
Her tractor beam gaze was locked and ready to pull me in. I had no idea what I was in for now.
Chapter 2. Margot folded her arms and took stock of the shop's front room.
Busy today.
My parents are visiting from New England, I said.
Margot nodded at them. It's nice to meet you both.
Then she turned back to me, and I couldn't help but smile. No one distracted Margot from her mission.
I'm glad to find you in the candy shop. You aren't always here.
She laughed. You seem to find a way to travel all over the village, and even the county. But since no one has been murdered, I should have known you would be here.
Murdered? What's that? My father yelped.
Margot went on, as if he'd said nothing at all. We must talk about tomorrow's event.
Swissman Suites is more than ready, Margot. Were there any last-minute special requests? I asked, hoping there weren't. I wanted to make sure you remembered what time to be at the church tomorrow for the Mother's Day tea.
She looked at her watch, as if to make a point about timeliness. I sighed. That was just like Margot. She made a house call when a simple text would have sufficed. But then again, I had never received a text from Margot. She much preferred her communications face-to-face so she could bully the other party into doing exactly what she wanted. Margot would not let her plans be disrupted by an easily ignored text message. Smart woman, I suppose. Yes, I said. I'll be there at 2:30, just like you asked. Charlotte and I have already made most of the treats. They're in the kitchen. Good, good. The tea will start at 3:30, but I know some of the ladies will get there early because they will want a good spot. Margot shook her head. There's a Mother's Day tea? My mother asked. Bailey, why didn't you mention this before? Am I going to the tea? I am your mother. I was just about to tell you before everyone arrived. I got tickets for you, Mommy, Charlotte, and me. I will be up and down, since I'll be serving. Pish posh, Margot said. You act like all I want you to do is work and have no fun. No comment. You can sit with your mother at the tea, Margot insisted. This is what these events are about, bringing women together to help other women. She turned to my mother. I'm very glad you will be there. It's all for a good cause. My mother frowned. What cause is that? Margot clicked her tongue. Bailey, have you told your parents nothing at all about what happens in the village? They just got here, so the tea is a fundraiser. Tickets are selling for $30 each. I know that seems expensive, but all the money will go directly to help the women at Abigail's farm. What is Abigail's farm? Dad asked. Margot stood up a little taller. She loved to speak about her events. It's a retreat for women who are struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. They go to the farm for rest and rehab, and they learn to farm while they're at it. Working with their hands and caring for animals can be a real godsend while they rebuild their lives. These women have already been through traditional drug addiction treatment. Abigail's farm is a place they can go when they feel they need a little more time before restarting their lives. Many women with substance abuse problems come from families with a history of drug and alcohol addiction, or they've suffered some other form of abuse that made them turn to drugs or alcohol to cope. For these women, re-entering the world can be frightening. Places like Abigail's Farm can ease them back in. It sounds like a great organization, my mother said. Margot nodded. It is. They do wonderful things. But the farm is struggling financially. The women attend at little cost, and the farm is not affiliated with any government agency that might subsidize it. We hope this tea will not only raise money for Abigail's farm, but also raise awareness. The farm needs to find bigger donors. At least, that's what I keep telling Polly Ann. Who is Polly Ann? Dad asked. Polly Ann Lind is the kindest woman, Juliet said. She's the person behind Abigail's farm. She really has a heart of gold, even after everything she's been through. I admire all she's done. I know many ladies from the church will be there to show their support. Reverend Brooke reminded them last Sunday. He's such a big-hearted man, and he wanted the ladies to know that it was essential our church members show up, especially since the event is being held in our building. She sighed happily as she thought of her husband-to-be. Margot nodded. Polly Ann is a good person. However, she doesn't have much business sense, and even a non-profit such as Abigail's Farm must run like a business. That's where I come in. I'm on the board, and I want to see the farm flourish so that it can help as many women as possible. Mommy cocked her head. You seem to be on the board of just about everything in this village. Margot nodded. It does feel that way at times. I just run from meeting to meeting. Right now I am headed home to put my feet up for a bit. Juliet, will my volunteers be able to get into the church tonight? We plan to be there about 7.
I want everything set up tonight to avoid confusion in the morning.
Of course, Juliet said. I will be there to help, too. Reverend Brooke is happy that our fellowship hall is being used for such a wonderful event. This will be a memorable Mother's Day weekend, to be sure.
I didn't doubt that for a moment as I looked around, from Aiden to his mother, my parents, Mommy, Charlotte, and Margot. I felt like I was in some kind of alternate universe, seeing them all in the same place at the same time.
And Bailey, is everything ready on your end?
Margot always double-checked. She never left anything to chance.
I nodded.
We have the suites covered. Do not worry about that. Margot made a check mark on her clipboard.
Good, good.
We have the tea and finger sandwiches handled by the ladies at the church. She looked at Juliet for confirmation.
Juliet nodded.
Yes, the ladies will put everything in the church fridge this afternoon. They're working on the sandwiches and finger foods as we speak. Margot made another check mark on her clipboard.
Excellent. It seems that we are all set.
What could possibly go wrong?
I really hated that she'd said that. In my experience, something always went wrong. And terribly wrong at that.
Chapter 3. The next afternoon, I rolled the wagon that I had filled with candy and other sweets across the green. Charlotte asked me if I needed her help setting up, but I told her to stay back at Swissman Sweets until it was time for her and Mommy to come over for the event. She would be much more of a help there to my grandmother. It was the day before Mother's Day, one of the busiest days of the year for our shop. Men and children always stumbled inside, hoping to find a last-minute treat for their wives and mothers. For the last hour and a half of the day, our other assistant, Emily Keem, would manage the shop, while Mommy, Charlotte, and I were at the tea. By the time I crossed the street with my wagon, I was exhausted. I had spent all morning wandering around the county with my parents so they could visit all of their favorite childhood haunts. I really didn't know why I had to go on that excursion, but my mother seemed bound and determined to cram in as much mother-daughter time as possible. Even though I would have preferred to take them to a nice breakfast or let them sleep late and relax a bit, I was glad to spend time with them. Besides, I shouldn't have been surprised by my mother's itinerary. She'd always been a woman on the go. Their flight back to Connecticut was very early Monday morning. As much as I loved my parents, I was already looking forward to it. The one advantage of being with my parents all day was I had been able to keep them away from Juliet, who still seemed set on having a heart-to-heart with my mother about getting Aiden and I hitched as soon as possible. However, I knew that both of them would be at the tea, and since I would be busy with the desserts, there wasn't much I could do to keep them separated. The square was quiet, which was unusual for a holiday weekend. There were a few families picnicking, and a man walking his dog. Margot loved to host big events on the square around any and every holiday, no matter how minor. She had plans for Groundhog Day, and Harvest didn't have a groundhog mascot. But knowing Margot, she'd find one. I imagined that Margot hadn't planned an event this Saturday because of the tea for Abigail's farm at the church. I knew she had a busy summer lined up for the entire village, and by extension, for Swissman Sweets and me. Even without Margot's plans, I would have a full docket. This summer would bring the debut of my television program and, of course, Juliet's wedding. It would be a wonder if I had enough time to breathe over the next 4 months. I prayed the summer would be quiet, at least in regard to murders. I knew Aiden wanted that as well. The rubber wheels of my wagon bumped over the curb onto the church parking lot. Instead of going through the grand purple front door at the top of the church steps, I pulled my wagon around the side of the building to the back door. On this side of the church, there was another small parking lot that overlooked a cemetery, that
to be honest, was quite lovely in the spring afternoon light. Because of Mother's Day, many of the graves had been decorated with floral wreaths and fresh bouquets.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?